Okay, so we'll take the opportunity to review some of the main points that we tried to bring out yesterday and try to apply them inside. And we had some makoros that some are a little more straightforward, some are less straightforward. So we'll try to make sure that we get the major points out of all of them. One of the things, I don't know how many of you got a chance to look at the Rambam in Perush Mishnayos. Yeah, so the Rambam Perush Mishnayos is long, but it's useful because you see that the comment that I directed you to is essentially his first comment on the Masechta, even though it comes after a few Mishnayos, is the way we have it. And it's essentially a review of a lot of the main... There's one specific point that I wanted you to see that was not a review, but it was worth reading the whole thing because it was essentially a review of a lot of the things that we've seen from the Rambam's perspective, together with some new information that's particularly relevant to what we're seeing here. So it's certainly worth working through that Rambam. And we'll call attention to the key points of that also. So just to try to recap first some of the questions that we considered yesterday. So we tried to figure out the topic of mummer in general, which is a complex issue, affects many areas of halacha, even though for a lot of purposes, chulin is its key home. And at least one major important mucker that affects a lot of things, we will see, God willing, in its proper place, because it is the... Yeah, chulin is actually where so much comes from. Again, I have to re-emphasize how Ashreinu Matov Chalkeinu to learn chulin. I was just talking to another of the Bayim about how so many other mesechtas you need to turn to chulin to get the makoros for. And here, the first parak of chulin, really fascinating stuff. Anyway, so we have a lot to pack in this year. So in any event, so the question of mummer... So we started to discuss yesterday that we know that there are a couple of different types of mummer, and that's going to be important. The distinction is going to make a difference. And just to highlight what those types are, so we could have somebody who, a mummer, first let's define mummer as somebody who removes himself from the halachic consideration, whether it is, to what degree or the other, that's going to be a big question, but say he does not participate in the halachic concern. So how far does he go with that? Does he, and why does he do that? So is it a localized, not concern for halacha, like a certain mitzvah that he doesn't take seriously, or doesn't worry about, or doesn't think is important? So that would be a mummer ledaver echad. And does he do so, the whole halachic system, say a mummer lechol Torah kula? And does he do so because he simply has taivas or interests in things that are prohibited by halacha and he's not willing to restrict them? So therefore he is a mummer lit te'avo? Or does he have some kind of rebellious component to what he's doing and he's not motivated by taiva, he's rebellious and therefore he is a mummer lahachis, and each one has its own halachic ramifications. And discussed also that certain areas of halacha seem to have broader impact. So when it comes to a mummer le teyavon, so when it comes to, let's say, a mummer l'avodah zarah, so we see that that's very likely a mummer l'chol Torah kula, even though the Gemara that you've seen so far discusses whether or not that is the only way to look at it, but we can assume that a mummer l'avodah zarah is a mummer l'chol Torah kula, and a mummer l'chol Shabbos b'farhesia specifically is considered to be a mummer l'chol Torah kula. So a lot that we have to try to assess about all of that. So first question, just to discuss why somebody, let's say, is a mummer l'te'avon for shechita specifically. So where does he fit into this equation? Yeah?
Sorry.
That's okay.
Do we consider somebody who's like a mummer l'te'avon and a different status than a mummer in a specific area with regards to that specific area?
I mean, it says they have, if we're talking about Shechita, it says they have somebody who's a Mumra L'Shechita, is there any difference between being a Mumra L'Chalat Torah Kula and a Mumra L'Shechita? Yeah, there very well is a difference. Because if we're talking about, let's say, a Mumra L'Teyavon L'Shechita, so we see that he could theoretically end up being kosher. So, but a Mumra L'Chalat Torah Kula is going to be worse off. So, let's try to consider some of these questions. So, if he's a mummer le teavon, so we find that he is theoretically acceptable if we check the knife and we watch him. So, or if we just check the knife, so if we ask him, so why should he be believed? So, normally we find that somebody who is chashud bedavar is not considered to be reliable in that area of halacha. So apparently here, and you see the language of the Rambam, that for the purposes of Shechita, he is considered to be Naman, and that the standard of credibility is different than normal Edus. And the Rambam uses the language of Naman. Even though one could possibly argue that it doesn't come from that mana specifically, but it comes just from the various chazakas that we have at play, that in terms of what is the likelihood that there was any problem under the circumstances with the checked knife and the fact that he doesn't have any interest in specifically going for non-kosher meat. So it could be that maybe we should be able to assume that there are various roves and chazakas in place. Now, roves and chazakas is part of what we have to be very excited about this year, because this parak has some of the, if not the key, sugyas about rove and chazaka. Just to give a little bit of a roadmap, by the way, for the immediate future, after we finish talking about Mumer and Isha, so right away we're going to get into sugyas like that, because we're going to talk about the premise the Gemara has here, that Rov Mitzuyin Eisel Shechita Mumchim, assumption that you can trust that people who are going to get involved in Shechita, they must know what they're doing. And what exactly does that imply? What exactly does that do? So that's coming up in the very near future. Later on in the parak, we have the key makoros for Rov and Chazaka, really very, very exciting stuff. So it could be that this is more a function of just the realities here, and not necessarily a function of his ne'amanus, and you will find that different Rishonim probably relate to this in a different ways in terms of what the credibility comes from. And Rav Soloveitchik discusses this in a shiur. We won't go into all the details, but that's one of the key issues here. When it comes to a mummer lahachis, let's say. So if we say that a mumr lahachis is no good, so what's the issue with a mumr lahachis? So yesterday we threw out some suggestions. Let's try to recap them. Why would you say a mumr lahachis should not be effective for shechita? If a mumr l'teyavon could be, why would a mumr lahachis not? What would you say? Why should a mumr lahachis be different? Yes, Levi?
There's a greater chance he's going to have bad intentions.
Right? Okay, so how much does intentions matter, though, here? So intentions,
I mean,
of what kind?
I guess not. I mean, having no intention is different than having deliberately bad intentions. So.
Right, but what kind, you're saying that the intention of being lahachis, of angering the Kodesh Baruch Hu, is like a Vizara? Is that the... Because what do you want to do with bad intentions, basically? You know, so what are the consequences of bad intentions? So if something is a takruvus of adazara, if something is, you know, actually for the purpose of idolatry, so then those intentions matter. But say he has intentions that...
whoever chance will embosh the shlita, I guess.
Ah, okay. So now I bring up something else. So maybe we have to worry that despite whatever we can observe, there's still a greater concern, and we know that there are certainly psulim that can happen without it being visible. So there are concerns that he actually will intentionally mess up the Shechita. So Rishonim reflect machlokus on this. If you had a chance to see, let's take a look together. At the top, Gimel Amud Beis, you find two different views here. Because if you look at the top of Gimel Amud Beis, so look at Rashi. And so Rashi Dibur Maschil Chutz, it's the second Rashi. So the second sentence in that Rashi, he writes, "V'davka ochel l'teyavon," that we have some room here only if somebody whose issue is because of his taiva. Aval ahachis, if somebody is looking to anger God, afilu, Rashi says, looking to give God a heart attack. It's such a strange imagery. But I guess that's anthropomorphism in a different sense. But looking to anger God, aval ahachis, afilu nimseis sakinu yafe, even if we see that his knife is fine, lo, why? What are the next words here? Demuad l'nabel b'kavana b'yadayim. That he is considered to be, muad is considered, this is a little bit of a bridge from last year's Masechta of Bavakama to this year's Masechta, right, that he's somebody, sorry?
You mean that he would have a chazaka on?
Right, the language of muad, where they're
thinking, like, established this.
Right, you know, muad means that he's a known entity as somebody who will intentionally try to mess it up. So then, that's much worse than the Mumer L'Teyavon, who we don't have to worry he's necessarily intentionally trying to cause problems. He's just not invested in making things good. So if it's not a big problem for him to make things good, he can do it easily enough, then we don't have to worry about him. But the Mumer L'Hachis, that's a problem. Now, the Tosis that we've seen already a few times, because it came up in the context of Akum, Tosis Katsavar, so Tosis has a different understanding. So in the middle of this Tosis, again, you've seen this Tosis Kasavar, where it says that an Akum is puzzled because of his Avachta, and the idea of being a Barzvicha. So 1, 2, 3, the fourth line in this Tosis, Lafuke Ove Kochavim, right? So this takes out a Akum, Ve'ochel Nevelos Lahachis. And also Eochel Nevelos Lahachis. So you see, that's very different than what Rashi says. This is pretty significant machlokas. So is the issue with the Mumer L'Hachis that there's a technical concern? That we're worried he's going to mess it up? Or is the issue that he's not a Barzvicha? Now, Tosfos saying that he's not a Barzvicha, even that you can understand in two ways. What are the two ways you could possibly understand that? That'll give us three ways total, right? So we have Rashi saying that it's a functional issue, and Tosfos is saying he's not a Barzvicha, but how could you understand that he's not a Barzvicha? What do you think? Why would he not be a Barzvicha? If a Jewish person is Mechuyev in Shechita, so should be better than a cotton. Right, so why is he not a Barzvicha?
Okay,
so he doesn't care about it. So that means we're defining Barzvicha. This was something we tried to figure out in the context of cotton, that maybe a Barzvicha doesn't mean somebody who is commanded, but somebody who cares about it. And we pointed out at the time we're talking about cotton that this actually helps us inversely for cotton, because if cotton is not obligated, and we said maybe he's obligated midrabanan, maybe he's obligated deraisa, but it's not even on him. So we mentioned, I think, for the Chavasal Sasharim, that this helps inversely. That if we want to define Barzvicha as somebody who cares about it, so maybe a Kutin cares about it without a Tzivui, and the Mumer L'Hachis is the opposite. He doesn't care about it, even though he has a Tzivui.
If that's the only qualification, then could you potentially, according to that, you'd be able to theoretically have a Goy who's a Barzvicha, which we can't have. If you have someone who's from his Goy out there, he keeps all the Shem Mitzvah, whatever it is.
Well, the problem is that even Shem Mitzvot Noach doesn't bring us to Shechita.
Right, I'm saying whatever it is, you know for a fact that he knows all the halachos of Shechita and will do a perfect job.
Right, but it's not about the job, it's about being part of the obligation of Zichah.
To be a necessity, would that be the point then? You know,
But I think yes.
Yeah, if you're only gonna, the only qualification would be as like someone cares about it.
Yeah, so I think your point is well taken that we have to define it more sharply, which we talked about in the context of Akum, that apparently you have to care about it for halachic reasons. You know, you have to, or care about it for reasons of necessity.
I mean, start allowing one non-Jew to do it. It's like,
what about someone
if you start to allow like one this non-Jew who really cares about shechita, it's like it's a slippery slope a little bit. Like,
I mean, it's a matter of policy.
Yeah,
which
like,
sounds like
to make a little plug on them.
That sounds like some readings of the Rambam. I mean, when the Rambam said that Akum is a affirmative concern, and then it sounds like he says that the fact that a non-idolatrous non-Jew is also out of the question, and he used the language of Gadr Gadol, so that sounds like what Levi is saying. But here, if you say that we're coming from the Bar Zvicha concern, and you want to define Bar Zvicha as not just commanded, but somebody who cares about it, so then Yossi's question is, so could you get to the point where a non-Jew is going to be on that status? So, because maybe he would care about it. So Levi is saying, as a matter of policy, let's say that it's not going to work, because how can you function like that? But I think it's more than that. I think that the caring has to be from a certain place. It's not just caring because you decide that you want to follow the laws of Shechita, and when you mention Shabbat Mitzvah, no, it's not one of them. Avraham and Achai is one of them, right? So, right. So, although, you know, it's interesting to try to question, you know, it's interesting to speculate about a little bit, because we do find, like when we talk about Ger Toshav and the like, that the Shabbat Mitzvah and Noach are principles, and it's possible that there's really more than seven. And there's a lot written about this. It's really a different discussion. But how you get more than seven, there are other sources, and sometimes they have ones derived from the other. Sometimes the Shavu Mitzvah and Noach are perceived as more klolim. So sometimes when you talk about a Ger Toshav, and you talk about somebody who is maybe more involved in the Shavu Mitzvah Noach than the average. So the Gemara has discussions in various places of an intensified sensitivity to these principles. So for example, the Gemara in Greece, this was Daf Yomi a few weeks ago, the Gemara talks about that there's a certain tension because we say that non-Jews aren't supposed to keep Shabbos. But part of our sugi here, if we say a mumer Shabbos is a mumer chol Torah kula, because Shabbos is testimony on creation. So maybe it's kind of connected to Avodah Zarah, that you shouldn't be idolatrous and you should believe in God's creation so much so that you're Shomer Shabbos. The Gemara has a discussion that maybe we should expect that a Ger Toshav should keep Shabbos. But the Gemara says it can't be because Shabbos isn't also only for the Jews. And the Gemara goes back and forth between maybe Yontif, maybe Chol Moed, maybe there's some kind of in-between stage. But the point being that there may be a concept of taking the Shavu Mitzvos to a greater degree. So it's interesting to consider, should you ever say that, okay, all the non-Jew has to do in terms of his only rule of kashrus, essentially, is he can't eat Avraham and Achai. He can't eat from a living animal. But maybe it's an interesting area to speculate. They say, okay, so he shouldn't be overtly cruel and rip the limb off of a living animal. But maybe if we connect Shechita to a heightened concern for Tzar Balei Chaim, maybe you should say that a really refined Ben Noach not only won't take a limb off a living animal, but will seek out the most painless way to kill the animal. And if we believe that that's Shechitos, then maybe there's a case to be made that there is even a Ben Noach value of Shechitos. So it's an interesting question to consider. And then maybe we get back to the Rambam kind of formulation that maybe it's more a matter of policy, even though the Rambam's coming from a different place, but maybe that's something that's interesting to consider. So one way to say in Tosus is that a mummer just doesn't care about it, and therefore that's part of being a Bar Zvicha, that you have to care about it. Although you have to sharply define why a mummer L'te'avon is not. And if a mummer L'te'avon never cares about Shechita, he's just happy to have kosher meat because why not? But he's not going to go to any effort to do it. Why wouldn't that mean the Shechita is essentially irrelevant to him? you know, he cares about as much as a non-Jew. So he'll eat in the nice kosher restaurant in Manhattan. He'll go there, but he doesn't care. He'll also go to the other place. So if it's irrelevant to you, you know, you have no desire specifically to eat non-shchuta food, but it's, you know, why is that not called not a bar zvicha? So it has to be more, I guess, than just not caring about it, but not caring about it aggressively. But then the other question here is also, is there another reason to say that a mummer is pasul, or at least a mummer of a certain degree? Because do we say mummer dino ka'akum? Do we say that a mummer at some point, his shchita is no good? And therefore, it's no good because he is not considered part of Klal Yisrael anymore. To choose your words carefully, because the concept of mummer dino ka'akum could mean a couple of different things. It could mean just that his actions are no different than an akum. It could mean that for other halachic purposes, he's considered to be ki'ilu, he's not Jewish. It could be for the purposes of being part of Klal Yisrael. Those sound similar, but they may not be exactly the same. So just while we're holding this point, if you just look in the Ran, it's also just kedai to see. And the Ran is in the very beginning of the Masechta. And Aleph. So I'm going to read certain select parts of the Ran. So here in the fancier editions, it's Aleph and Aleph, let's say in the second paragraph. So he talks about the difference between Teyavon and Lahachis. So after talking about Teyavon, about four lines in, he says, V'davkala Teyavon hu, the Bodek Sachar Nacharav. So when it comes to somebody whose only interest here is L'Teyavon, so then you can check the knife afterwards. Aval Ochel Nevelos L'Haches, if somebody is intentionally to anger God eating Nevelos, Afilo Nimse Sakinu Yafa, even if we see he has a good knife, so Mu'ad Hu L'Navel B'Kavano B'Yadayim. Because, like Rashi had said, that he is somebody who we can assume will be menavel on purpose. So that's the language you saw from Rashi. But later on, he mentions other points here. So the language here, I'm skipping to the paragraph that begins with Inyan. So the second column in this fancy edition. So here his language is L'inyan mumr lechol nevelos afilu shalo l'teyavon. So it says he's mumr tit nevelos for other reasons. In bar kusakin v'nostan lo v'amdo al gabav mitchil v'yad sof shchitasuk shera. So if we stand, we give him, we check the knife, and we stand over him the entire time. So then his shchita is going to be good. The cave in the kaimalan mumr ledaver echad lo havi mumr lechol atarik kula, because since he's not necessarily a mumr l'chol Torah kula. It's only for this one matter. Isa b'shchita. So he's still in the parsha of shchita. Sounds like meaning that it's the bar zvicha, essentially. V'shchitaso kishera. Aval lo amdu agav v'tchil b'yatsov shchitaso psula. But if we didn't watch him the entire time, then the shchita is no good. Because since he is a mummer for any reason, so we're worried maybe for a psul. But that's still, here this is a space between not teyavon and not mummer lahachis, to figure out exactly what that means. Of a mummer lahachis, if he's looking to cause problems, a filo davar echad, even for one thing. V'chein mummer la'avodis kechavim. Now, what if he is a mummer for avodah zarah? Harehein ka'ovdei kochavim gemurin she'ena b'shchita klal. So then they are like ovdei avodah zarah, that are not considered to be in the parish of Shchita at all. Afilu amdu al gaba mitchil v'yatzof, Shchitas l'psula. Even if they were watching from beginning to end, she'ein shchit el b'Yisrael, k'detan l'kaman shchitas levit k'chavim nevela. So here the Ran is mentioning another point. He's mentioning all the points here together, that essentially, on the one hand, we have to consider that sometimes it's going to be menabel on purpose. So that's true about a mumr lahachis, about this particular mitzvah. But if he is... In order to define that, you also have to define our terms even more sharply here, because what does a motive lahachis mean?
Spite.
Right. So it normally should mean to spite, but what do you mean spite God? Presumably, or spite the Torah. So why would you be a mumer lahachis for one mitzvah then, and from for everything else?
Well, Rameir, I think, says that wouldn't be. Like, if you're a mummer for one thing, you're a mummer for everything.
Well, but here, if we're assuming that we can draw a distinction, right, so if the motive is, when it's l'teavon, we understand, okay, somebody has a tremendous desire for one particular act, or let's say again, Mashiach has a tremendous desire for chazer, he just cannot live without it. So he just ignores the fact that chazer is prohibited, so he's a mummer for that. Right, but everything else that doesn't tempt him so much, so he tries to be observant. We get that. We understand why, if your motives are the te'avon, you only have te'avon in that one area and not in others. And maybe we could distinguish, and as even I say, in terms of ne'amonis, that somebody who's careful about one area of halacha, but the other area of halacha, he just gives up on. So why they could be believed in the area that they are and not in the areas that they're not. But if you're mumma lahachis, so why would you be lahachis only in one mitzvah and not in the other? It all come from one God. So it might require defining things a little more specifically. That maybe there's a mitzvah that you not only don't care about, but you feel this mitzvah is immoral. Let's say, we know that throughout the world there's often anti-shchita campaigns. We believe it's based on a misunderstanding and maybe worse than that, but let's say you believe that shchita is inhumane. So you specifically want to defy this mitzvah. You aggressively do not participate in shchita. But the rest of the Torah, that sounds good to you, so that you will... You believe, and you have to define lahachis a little differently than I think we usually do. You're not just anti-religion; you're anti one specific aspect of it, but the rest of the religion, you're willing to go along with.
It's so simple to say that some group doesn't do shchita for, if they think it's inhumane, is doing lahachis.
Well, I would say, but the point is that they're defying that mitzvah specifically. Right, so distinguish between a l'teyavon. Even though here the Ran's also mentioning essentially a third category. And we had some other motive in between. But let's say it's one thing if a person is dumb. He just doesn't care enough about shechting, so he's not going to go to any effort to shecht, or he's not going to turn down the beef at this very attractive restaurant just because they don't shecht, because, they do such a good job. So, he's careful. He'll go to the steakhouse and he's not going to have any pork. He's not going to have, he's Jewish. He's not going to have, all these things. But he'll have the nevelas, he'll have, which is maybe not so hard to imagine, right? He wants to go to all the steakhouses in Manhattan, so he'll have nevelas and treifas, but he's not going to have a behemoth tamea. Because it just seems so good. And I got a gift certificate for a free steak at this place. How could he turn it down?
Free is free.
Hey, watch it. So, in any event, that, so he's so the te'avon for that one thing. But if you give him the gift certificate to Lamarae instead, he'll happily take that. He'll happily take whatever is available. But the lahachis, he has something about he doesn't want to participate in shlita. Davka no shlita. But if he's a mummer for avodas kochavim, right here the Ran is distinguishing. Right, if he's a mummer lahachis, or he's a mummer avodas kochavim, or a mummer chal shabbos for hesya. So here there's this added component that we see him as not Jewish for this purpose. And then you plug back into Tosfos and the Rush and those who say that you need to be a Bar Zvicha, and he's no longer a Bar Zvicha. Now, if that din is the case, we have a lot we got to figure out about that. And we're going to... going to run out of time, we'll have to continue this tomorrow, but we have a lot to have to figure out about that. So to say mumr dino ka'akum, is that a din daraisa? Is that a din darabanan? And let's assume we don't have any explicit makoros to tell you one way or another. Why would you say one way or another? Is there a svara to call it daraisa, or call it a svara to call it darabanan?
I think it could be, if it's derabanan, it seems to be weird to use uproot deraisa obligations.
Well, I'll tell you, no offense, that's so weird for two reasons. First of all, Chazal can uproot deraisa obligations. Although, I guess what you mean in general here, you're saying the second point I'm about to say is that shchita is not per se an obligation. We're just talking making a shchita not kosher. You're saying that the whole thing of dino ka'akum. So we don't mean that we pater him from mitzvos, but we mean for certain specific halachos, such as this. You know, we clearly hope he's going to do tshuva and come back and do all his obligations, so we don't let him off the hook. Although there's some interesting discussions in some contexts of ribbis and the like, which is a little bit outside of our scope right now. But you certainly don't mean he's off the hook officially. So. I mean, it's okay, if he shechts, we consider him like a non-Jew for this purpose. So is that a din d'oraisa or a din d'rabbanan? So, you know, many point to the language of this Ran, that you feel that this Ran sounds like it's d'oraisa, the Rashba, we'll talk more about tomorrow, sounds like it's d'rabbanan. Sounds like from the Tosefta that we've seen a few times, so I opened it up again, that Min HaTorah, at least every Jew is kosher. Because the language of the Tosefta, just read it again, HaKol K'sherin L'shchot, Afilu Kusi, Afilu Yisrael Arel, V'Afilu Yisrael Sheheimer Daito La'avodas Kochav. So it sounds like, at least on some basic level, a Mummer, in the worst sense, is kosher. But shchitas avodas kochavim, arez psula, etc., shchitas akof, because of the din that we've interpreted as a bar zvicha, if you recall. So, again, not coming from sources specifically, but what would it imply if you say it's pasul daraisa, you say it's pasul drabanan, what would it imply one way or another? Presumably, what it would imply is that if you say it's pasul daraisa, so then you're saying that essentially there's missing something fundamental that's necessary for shechita. And we don't need to make any further legislation to put him in that category. So either because you say you need a bar zvicha and he's not, but you see the Tosefta does not seem to see it that way, but maybe the Ran does, because this is not Issa B'Shchita. So either you're saying that by removing himself from the feeling of obligation regarding mitzvos, he's considered not a Bar Zvicha. Or, if you want to compare him to an Oved Avodah Zarah literally, saying that the same way a non-Jew is not going to be kosher because of the pasuk, like the Rambam says. So too, somebody who has disconnected himself from the whole halachic system is essentially no different. But if you say it's the Rabbanan, so then what do you mean? So if you say it's the Rabbanan, it might be a knas. Right? It might be that it's not inherently true. But it might be that Chazal are seeking, and we'll see some other dinim like this, Chazal are seeking to dissuade people from acting this way. Right? Both to convince people not to live a life of mumrus, and also to diminish the influence of the mumr on the rest of society. So maybe Chazal made a policy. And Chazal said that even though everything else here could have worked, but we're making a din that we're not going to accept the Shechita and other related policies. So that's something that we also have to keep in mind. So we made some significant bridge points today, but what we still need to pick up on, we need to understand more about this question that we just raised. Is this essentially some kind of an onus or knas, or is it something more inherent? And does this relate? This relates back to our previous discussion. Are we concerned about practical things? Are we concerned about bar zvicha? Three possibilities. Are we concerned about practical things? Are we concerned about bar zvicha? Or are we concerned about simply losing Jewish status and other implications that that may have? But one of the questions also, so just to pick up to this point tomorrow, is what is the process for becoming a mummer? Is it a declaration of intent? Is it something that requires a certain pattern? So that's something you'll see is a difference in Rishonim. And just to focus you a little more, that was a part of what the Rambam in Parish Mishnayos was addressing. And so you mentioned that the Tosfos on Daf Yudalid, there's a little long and involved. So just to highlight the key point that you should get from that Tosfos, the question is, if the Mishnah says that somebody could theoretically be shechting on Shabbos and theoretically could be kosher, so Tosfos is saying, isn't this person a mummer if he's shechting on Shabbos? So Tosfos is discussing the question of what does it take to establish somebody as a mummer. Is it possible we could have the scenario in this Mishnah that you're shechting on Shabbos and yet you are not yet a mummer? So that's the issue that this Tosfos is most important for our purposes, and we will, God willing, pick up all of that tomorrow. All right, I wish everyone a wonderful and productive day. Everyone should recover from all the various issues of exhaustion, illness, allergy, and weather changes. And I look forward to